The Catholic Channel Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world, viewed through our perspective of Catholic social thinking, Catholic social wisdom. And even though our Catholic faith, you know, ultimately kind of points us to a heavenly kingdom, and Jesus has said a few things, which basically says, you know, we should focus on our citizenship in heaven, our Catholic tradition has always said that what goes on this earthly journey is very, very important, and that what we should be trying to do on this earthly journey is imitating what should be perfect when we get to heaven. And so issues of justice, issues of peace, human dignity, human rights, compassion, all of those things should be part of our earthly journey, and not merely as individuals, our own individual response to that, but basically when we get together as society, how do we organize ourselves so that our world is more reflective of those values that should be part of the world we live in, because we're all made in God's image and likeness. And so we talk about issues in the world, and, you know, a very important part of the world that we live in is politics, is the way that we are governed, the way we develop the policies that either make our world a better place or they don't make our world a better place. And, you know, it's not given that every policy that passes is a good policy. Now, sometimes they move in directions which are not so good and not so positive. Tomorrow night, earlier this week, let me get that straight, is that there's the annual event in New York City called the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation Dinner. And what that does is celebrate the legacy of Al Smith, a governor of New York State who was Catholic, an unsuccessful candidate for president, of which there have been many over the years. And his dinner kind of celebrates that legacy and raises some money for charitable purposes. And I'm delighted that one of the people who will be our guest at that is the former senator of New York State, Nicholas Spano. And he was an assemblyman, and he's going to be our guest at that dinner. And I'm delighted that he's taken the time to be with us this today on Just Love. So, Senator Spano, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love today.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks for inviting me.
And I'm grateful that you're going to be a guest on at the Al Smith Dinner. Thanks for joining us for the Al Smith Dinner.
I'm looking forward to that event. It's it's more than an event. It's a tradition.
Yep.
In New York State, and I'm really looking forward to being there and spending some time with you and all of our friends.
Great. So, Senator Spano, you spent a fair amount of time in elected office, primarily in the Assembly and the Senate of New York State. So your time in elected office spans decades, doesn't it? Exactly how long were you an elected official?
I was elected to the Assembly when I was 25 years old. By the way, Monsignor, I had no right even being in the Assembly at that point. I ran against an incumbent member of the Assembly. I don't know who was more surprised, the fact that I won or my opponent that he lost. But I was there for 8 years and then was lucky enough to be elected to the Senate and served in the New York State Senate for 20 years. Where I finished off my career as the Assistant Majority Leader of the Senate.
Well, you spanned a long period of time. So, you know, it's interesting. I hadn't thought about this, but maybe the more things change, the more they remain the same. I bet you. Who'd you beat the first time you ran?
It was Tom McInerney, who was a Democrat member of the Assembly, and he chaired the Governmental Employees Committee. I always tell the story that I was in the sixth grade in St. Peter's School in Yonkers, and Tom McInerney came to visit the school at a field day. And I remember listening to him, and then I went on to take his seat. And the second person who had visited us that day in the sixth grade was Senator John Flynn. And I went on to succeed Senator Flynn after he retired. So it's that tells you about good, solid education of St. Peter's School in Yonkers.
Well, you know,
you know well.
Yeah, you know, Senator Spanner. I grew up in Yonkers, and I think Senator Flynn back then was represented the district that I lived in. So let me draw a little bit of an analogy in a slightly different way, but it doesn't seem like it's too far fetched. Do you think Assemblyman McInerney was surprised when you beat him?
I think so. I mean, I think they probably took it for granted, because here I am. Then I was a 24-year-old kid running for the assembly, just barely out of college, out of Iona College, and we worked hard. I spent every dime I had. I wore out a couple of pairs of shoes and was lucky enough to win by 600 votes. It was a proud day for not only for me but for my family. You know, my father was a county legislator and Westchester County Clerk for years. We are part of a family that's dedicated ourselves to public service. As you know, my brother now is the mayor of the city of Yonkers. So public service is something that has always inspired us. We were able to do a lot of good things, particularly in the Senate. I chaired the Mental Health Committee, and in that role worked with people with special needs and people who did not have a voice in the state capitol.
So we'll
and
come.
It was a pleasure to be that voice.
We'll come back to that. But how would you compare, like decades ago, with what you kind of did in that race and what happened just recently in Queens with Representative Joe Crowley being beat by a much younger candidate? It was a primary, not a general election. How would you kind of compare or contrast those two elections?
I think when you get in office, there are some similarities. You know, when you're in office for a long time, you tend to take it for granted a bit. You tend to become more focused on, say, in the state capital or the nation's capital, depending on what office you hold, and people want you to pay attention to their local needs. People want you to be there. People want to see you. People want to see you at those Boys and Girl Scout award ceremonies. I mean, and that has been, if I learned anything from Senator Flynn, who was an iconic fixture in our community for decades. It was get to as many events as you can, and it's very often more important what you do in the community and less important what you do in the state capitol.
Well, you know what I think you can kind of run a lot of life organizations by a few sayings. I think you can, but one of them I think what you've just pointed out is what we say: 90% of life is showing up.
It is so true, and having something to say, you know, to have a story to tell, I don't have to tell you. I mean, Catholic Charities for years has become an essential role in protecting the dignity of people all across, or particularly across New York State, with the role that you play, and there are people with some unique needs that need the attention of government, and it's up to those elected officials to pay attention to those needs. So it's important. I mean, it's important to show up, but it's important to have a message and to deliver.
You know, Senator, we're speaking with Senator Spano, who has been an elected official for many years, representing Lower Westchester, Yonkers, who is moved on now, and he does some consulting work at the moment. But you know, you talked, and I thought this is very, very important for our listeners, because you talked about public service. And the reality is that elected officials, nobody usually refers to them as elected officials. It's also usually with a scorn, those politicians. Look at who they are. But why is it, do you think, that, you know, we don't think so much anymore of elected officials as public servants. We just think of them as politicians. Why such low regard for politicians these days?
I think the tone of politics has gotten to be so nasty in recent years, particularly when it comes out of Washington, where you're seeing such a negative tone, where the mutual respect that always existed between members of the legislature, whether you be a Republican or a Democrat, whether you agree or disagree, there was always a certain amount of mutual respect. And unfortunately, that has been deteriorating in recent years. And as a result, I think the public look at that. They look and they say these politicians, all they do is fight. All they do, there's paralysis in this nation's capital. Why can't they get things done? And as a result, people lose faith in their elected officials and the fact that they work hard. For the most part, I mean, I know I've known hundreds and hundreds of elected officials over the years. There are some bad apples, there's no question. But for the most part, they're good, solid, hardworking, determined men and women who want to make their communities better. They're not in this to make money, because they certainly don't get paid enough money. They're in it to improve the quality of life of the people they represent.
So I know this is like the $64,000 question. I mean, but how did we get here, and what do we do to get out of here? Because I think you've described what, at least from my perception, is a pretty accurate perception of how people perceive elected officials and that divisiveness. How do we get here? How do we get out of here?
You know, I think a lot of times elected officials are defined by what goes on in Washington, and that's unfortunate because there's sometimes a lack of human dignity that exists in Washington. I could speak to the state capitol, where for the most part, Republicans and Democrats get along with each other. They may vigorously oppose each other on public policy issues in the assembly or in the Senate, but when it comes time to treat their fellow members with some basic respect, it's always happened. And that's becoming more. We're seeing more and more personal attacks. You know, where if you disagree with someone, you attack them personally, and that's really unfortunate because it's not the way that we should be teaching our young people about getting involved in the political process. I look at my own nieces and nephews, and I try to encourage them to be involved in the political process. And they look at me like I've got two heads. And they said, why should we do that? You don't make enough money. You live in this fishbowl, and everyone attacks you. And we've seen what's happened to our own family. But we need to encourage good, solid young people to get involved in this process and to begin to change it. And to stop the deterioration that we're seeing in just the way people treat each other. It's just basic lack of kindness very often.
You know, Senator Spano, I tend to agree with you that I do see a little bit more, working together in Albany by people who are Democrats, who are Republicans. I do see a little bit more of that. But I also think even in Albany, there is still a perception of government and as legislatures as not doing the right thing. And there's a lot of stuff there and stuff behind closed doors. They talk about how the budget gets done, etc. So while some of that, I think, is there, there's still not a really, really high opinion of what goes on politically.
That's true, but I think if you ask the average voter their position or their opinion of the legislature, right, and they may have a knee-jerk negative reaction to the legislature as an institution. But then when you ask them about their individual member of their own individual senator or a member of the assembly, well, they say, well, no, we like that person.
Yeah.
So so there's an institutional bias that exists because of the reputation that elected officials have gotten, and there've been some scandals. There've been some members of the legislature who have violated the trust that was presented to them, and it makes everyone else look bad. But I think that for the members who work hard, people respect the job that they do. But unfortunately, at first blush, everyone gets painted with the same brush.
So let me now ask you, I know we only have a few more minutes, and I appreciate your taking the time to be with us. What's your proudest accomplishment as chair of the Mental Health Committee?
When I was first elected, I was appointed chair of the committee. Frankly, I didn't know a lot about those issues, and I felt like I was back in college where I learned about the unique new needs of people who are born with a developmental disability, who suffered from mental illness, or have some alcohol or chemical dependency, and learned very, very immediately that these same individuals did not have a voice in the state capitol. So what I'm most proud of is that I provided a voice for people with disabilities in communities all across New York State, that we worked to close outmoded facilities and build a community-based system of care for people who suffer from mental illness. I think we still have a long way to go. We have a long way to go in children's mental health services and handling the emotional needs of our young people and the scourges of the fight of drug abuse and opioid abuse. But I think that what I was most proud of is standing up and working with and for people with special needs. And that's what gave me the most sense of accomplishment as a member of the Senate.
Yeah, and as you talked about, trying to make sure that people who needed some structure, who for whatever reason couldn't live either on their own or couldn't live with their own families, that the places where they lived were safe and they were decent. They weren't just warehouses and places where kind of people were put away and weren't there. The challenge that sometimes happens, as you are very aware of, is that nobody seems to want those residences on their block, that sometimes there's a lot of stigma attached as to what people with those challenges have. And that's sometimes a challenge for an elected official because they need votes and they kind of want to do the right thing. And it's a balancing act, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't long ago in New York State's history that we put people who had a developmental disability in an institution and locked them up and left them there.
Yeah.
And thank God those days of Willowbrook are long over, and we're building newer and smaller community residences. And I firmly believe that people with disabilities have a right to live in the community, work in the community, and play in the community. But I also understand that very often a family has one investment, and that's their home. And they're very fearful of that the value of that home, and they're fearful of what they don't understand. Once they get past the initial shock that maybe a community residence is going to be placed there, and once they learn that people with disabilities are good neighbors, they don't bring crime to a neighborhood. They're not dirty members of a neighborhood, and very often they're good, solid people who, through no fault of their own, were born differently than others, and they're very much accepted in communities all across New York State. But you're right, there is a knee-jerk stigma that's out there, and that's something we work hard to try to overcome.
Hey, Senator Spano, I know you have something else important that you have to do, but I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us on Just Love, and I really look forward to seeing you at the Al Smith dinner, as you mentioned. It is an event. It's a legacy. It's kind of an important part of our New York community. So thanks for being a guest on Just Love, and thanks for being a guest at the Al Smith dinner.
I look forward to seeing you, Monsignor. Thank you for inviting me to be on the show. This was fun. I can talk to you all day.
Great. Former Senator Nicholas Spano, who is now with the Empire Strategic Planning Group. And we're delighted that we spoke with him about elected office, and we spoke with him about his work as the chair of the Mental Health Committee and some of the atmosphere in politics, which is not too good, and how there's a need to kind of treat people with respect, even if we might have different policy solutions to what is going, what we think's best for our society. So I think we should take a break, and when we come back, we'll look a few things that are in the news. And then a little bit later in our show, we're going to be speaking with Frank Sawyer, who is the president of the board of directors of Gigi's Playhouse in New York City, which is basically a center for Down syndrome achievement. And so we're looking forward to that conversation. So thanks for being with us on Just Love. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Our world will be more just and will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So, this is the week of the Al Smith Dinner. We just spoke with a former elected official about some of the problems that we're having in our political sphere. And one of the news notes that I'm going to ask Fanny to share with us is, from my perspective, a precise highlighting of one of the things that is wrong with our whole kind of political atmosphere at the moment. And so, listeners, you may sense a little bit of disdain in my voice when we discuss this, but Fanny, tell us what this, I'm going to say it, this nonsense going on about Native American heritage, the president, Elizabeth Warren, what's going on with this stuff?
So in a rather unusual campaign move, Senator Elizabeth Warren has released the results of a DNA test that says there is a strong evidence of Native American ancestry dating back 6 to 10 generations, addressing a controversy that has followed her for years. The results were part of an elaborate strategy to end questions about her ancestry, possibly in anticipation of a 2020 presidential bid. In addition to the DNA analysis that fit with family stories, Warren also released a campaign-style video with clips of Trump, President Trump, mocking her in vignettes from her family history. At a rally in Montana this past July, Trump taunted Warren for her claims of Native American ancestry, calling her Pocahontas. He suggested that if he were to debate her in 2020, he would give her one of those take-home DNA kits they sell on television for $2. He says, "I will give you $1 million to your favorite charity, paid for by Trump, if you take the test and it shows you're an Indian." The crowd then cheered. But on Monday morning, the president was asked about the challenge and falsely told reporters, "I didn't say that." So Warren, who has had a longstanding feud with the president, challenged him on Twitter on Monday morning, asking that the bet be paid up to the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Nonsense.
Yes.
Nonsense. I mean, on both sides of this, in my judgment, I don't think it is a good idea for anybody to kind of mock somebody with names. So doing that, I think, makes no sense. I also think, who cares? I don't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, why aren't we talking about what are the policies that are going to make our country a better place? I'm willing to take, and I'll say this, I'm willing to take a ancestry test, and I'm willing to bet that my ancestry goes back to Adam and Eve. It might be, you know.
Monsignor. You sure about that?
I'm willing to bet it might be 27,000
right.
generations past.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I go back to, Jake, what about you?
Adam or Eve, one of them, sure.
Fanny, what do you think?
Maybe. I think so.
Yeah. I mean, and. This goes back 6 to 10 generations, and if it's 6, it's like a little bit over 1%. If it's 10, it's like under 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? somebody going to claim? I really thought the only one who I thought made sense on this was one of the high officials in the Cherokee Nation, who said, "This is nonsense." He didn't use the word nonsense. He said, "Listen, we got legal definitions of what you can be to be part of it. This doesn't even come close." I mean, again, I know we had a nice conversation with Senator Spano, but it's this type of nonsense that politicians do that really make a little bit of a mockery of what's going on. And so I'm not picking on Elizabeth Warren. I'm not picking on the president. I'm picking on both of them. Because,
right.
I mean, you know, this is, can somebody act like a grown-up and not, and like, deal with, I mean, we have real issues of poverty.
Yeah.
We do have real issues of discrimination.
Especially on reservations. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
This is small potatoes compared to that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there are issues that have been, you know, highlighted of substance abuse, of lack of education, of stuff like that. Those are real, real issues, and this is just, to me, so distracting, and one of the reasons why, again, that people do have such a negative feeling about politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, enough of that. I don't want to spend any more time on it. But Fanny, we still got some issues with refugees in Myanmar, don't we?
Yes. A new report claims that members of Myanmar military use Facebook to spread propaganda. So Myanmar has been in the news recently because of the Rohingya's crisis. Rohingya is a Muslim minority group. The crisis started last year when a Rohingya's militant group attacked security forces there. The military responded by killing thousands of Rohingyas, burning entire villages and raping women. Hundreds and thousands have fled to the neighboring Bangladesh. Now we're finding out that for years, the military apparently used Facebook as a tool to spread negative sentiments about the Rohingya. Facebook says it removed a number of those accounts and that it'll continue to investigate and take action.
So again, that's one of those, again, awful situations mm-hmm. where, you know, we have a lot of refugees, we have a displaced persons in the world, and it's a very, very difficult situation. And it's easy for us to get distracted and not realize that that is an incredible crisis that we have. And that's a real issue of discrimination, a real issue of persecution that we should raise up so that people are aware of it. So it is an awful situation. The other thing which I want to just, everybody should be aware of this, mm-hmm. but refresh our listeners' memory, because I do have a comment about this, the disappearance of the journalist who I think was living in, is a resident in the United States, mm-hmm. but is a Turkish national. Mm-hmm. And refresh our memory about that one.
Sure. So, you know, the story has been developing, but Turkish officials have said that they fear a Saudi hit team killed and dismembered Jamal Khashoggi. He wrote a piece critically of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Recently, his fiance, the journalist's fiance, says that she was with him the day that he disappeared. He had gone into a Saudi consulate building to get documents so that they could marry. So the Saudis are reportedly preparing to admit that the missing journalist Jamal Khashoggi died in their custody at Istanbul. The Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, visited this week in hopes of containing what can be a diplomatic crisis with the close U.S. ally. So far, and I read this recently, that the squad of Saudi operatives who allegedly killed the journalist reportedly beat and drugged him. As a top Saudi diplomat looked on, the diplomat was then told to leave the room. And that's when they proceeded to dismember his body.
So why is this important? Why do we care about this? We care about this because from our Catholic social perspective, that participation in public life is very important, and it should be informed participation. And one of the roles that journalists have is reporting information so that citizens, people of different countries can form a judgment when they vote, when they raise their voice about the way things are. Now, apparently this journalist, you know, raised some negative stuff about the Saudi leadership. And therefore, you know, the speculation is, the allegations are, that the Saudi leadership said, we're not going to tolerate this, and basically ordered him to be killed. Now, all these are allegations, but it is something that we care about from our Catholic perspective, because there should be a free discussion of ideas, and leaders should not be immune from criticism, and reporters have a responsibility to do that. It encourages civic participation, encourages a free exchange of ideas, which makes for a better informed electorate. And so when things like this happen, we do raise our voice and say, wait a minute, the government's got to put up with some criticism, even if it hurts, because the citizens need to know what's going on, etc. So anyway, but so that's an issue which has become very, very raised up. And there are a lot of other issues related to relationships between this administration and Saudi. But I wanted to raise it up as why we care that journalists are protected and that good information is out there so people can participate and raise their voice. So let's take a break. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
Welcome back to Just Love. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, and just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. So we've been speaking about a variety of topics this week, and I am delighted that for the next few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Frank Sawyer, who has come into the studio, who is the board president of Gigi's Playhouse in New York City. And Gigi's Playhouse helps people with Down syndromes and their family to receive self-esteem and self-confidence. And so I'm delighted that Frank Sawyer has come into the studio. Frank, thank you so much for being with us on Just Love.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So just give us a little bit of a background of what Gigi's Playhouse is about.
Gigi's Playhouse is the only place in New York City that serves people with Down syndrome solely. That's our mission. And we're connected to a national organization, which has now gone international, called Gigi's Playhouse in Chicago. It's been around for about 13 years. And we have been around for about 6 years. And we were founded by Tracy Nixon and Debbie Morris because their children have Down syndrome. And we service the community, those with Down syndrome, their families, their siblings, etc.
So our listeners are in different parts of the country. And so give our listeners just a little bit of a sense of what is Down syndrome?
My Down syndrome is an extra chromosome. Chromosome 21, there's an extra chromosome. So people with Down syndrome have similar characteristics. People with Down syndrome, for the most part, are very non-acrimonious. They're very benevolent. They're kind-hearted people. So we're very fortunate to have them in our families and in our communities. So the Playhouse serves the people with Down syndrome by offering programs that are free of charge, that have to do with literacy, that have to do with challenges that people with Down syndrome face regarding learning. So we assist them with that. And it's really through the life cycle of people with Down syndrome, not just children, but also young adults and adults. And we create a social system for them to feel a part of and for their families to share information and learn from.
So what's the effect with the extra chromosome? How does it kind of affect?
How does it manifest itself?
Yeah.
Right. There are certain characteristics physically, okay, and there are certain characteristics emotionally. They only reach a ceiling of a certain age intellectually, but they are expanding that by the programs that we offer and by the offerings of other organizations as well. Helping people with Down syndrome by far exceed the limited expectations they had several years ago.
So again, there's a similarity, but I assume there might be different degrees in which people are able to advance or...
Agreed.
Yeah.
Different degrees depending on the education, the early intervention, how people were raised. My brother is 52, and he has Down syndrome.
Okay.
And I was introduced to the Playhouse when he moved here about 6 years ago. So he would have a social organization to belong to and something to learn from. So we service people with all different ages. And he is probably on the lower end of the spectrum communicatively, but I see people who are now receiving education at a younger age by far surpassing what his capability was, the expectation was.
So we're speaking with Frank Sawyer, who is the chairman of the board of Gigi's Playhouse in New York. Frank, one of our Catholic Charities agencies, which was Kennedy Children's Center,
mm-hmm,
over the years has provided some early intervention services to children with Down syndromes.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people who is a graduate of Kennedy Child's Study Center was a gentleman who wound up growing up to be an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is escaping me right now. Is it Chris Boy? But he went to Kennedy Center, and he was on a regular television show, and he had a wonderful life, mm-hmm, very supportive parents.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think what you're talking about is that it's there's a need to recognize that maybe people with an extra chromosome can't do everything in the mm-hmm. world, but boy, they can do a lot.
They can do a lot, and they can also do it in a different way.
Right.
It's not necessarily the way everyone else would do it.
Right.
And that's individual as well, as people with Down syndrome have individual capabilities.
Yeah. This young man who, he would say, you know, I don't like to think of me having Down syndromes. I think of me having up syndromes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things I can right. do. Where'd the name Gigi come from?
Gigi is actually the name of the daughter of the founder of Gigi's Playhouse. And she founded that when she was diagnosed and she had Gigi, and she realized that there were not a lot of offerings for people with Down syndrome and to address their differences. So that's why that was formed as Gigi's Playhouse.
So tell us a little bit more. What does the Playhouse do? I mean, I hear Playhouse
mm-hmm.
and I think they put on plays.
Right, exactly. So it's more of a playhouse where people come to congregate, where people come to play, not to put on plays, if you would. So we have programs for people, like I said, with Down syndrome regarding literacy. We have an art program called the Gratitude Art Program, where they create art, which is across the city, given to volunteers and donors for Gigi's Playhouse. We have a community chorus that we're starting, which is very exciting. So people with Down syndrome, their siblings, family members, and friends can be part of the community chorus they're putting together.
And actually like a real choir music chorus?
Yeah,
is that what it is?
Absolutely.
Ah.
Well, yeah.
And is kind of mixed with family members
exactly.
and...
Exactly.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, again, with you know, in a variety of people who may have certain challenges that mm-hmm. they face in life, one of the things that seems to be a trend over the past number of decades is that you kind of want to integrate people. You don't mm-hmm. want them isolated, so you don't want... Is this the same thing with people with Downs?
Well, there's, once again, a whole variety
right.
of the way that people respond to that. People with Down syndrome oftentimes embrace people in their community. They also benefit from being integrated,
right.
you know, with education. So they're part of special ed groups, some people. They're part of a wide variety of education, where they have integration. So it really depends on the parents' desire.
And given the type of limitations that people have, for the most part, are people with Down syndrome living with their parents?
To a degree, much more so than they used to.
Okay.
In the past, institutionalization was automatically recommended.
Right.
So when Peter was born 50 years ago, it was highly recommended that he be institutionalized.
Right.
And we changed that.
So okay.
over the years, that has changed. He actually stayed with his family.
Right.
He didn't become institutionalized. But so I would say more so now people are staying with their families. But in the past, that was frowned upon.
And how about life expectancy?
It's grown. Because
really?
People are, they're offered much more health-inducing interventions previously than they were.
Right.
You know, before there's the hearing problem, there's cardiovascular problems, and sometimes those weren't addressed in the best way.
You know, one of the things that we found at Catholic Charities is that many times a very, very loving family provides just such a wonderful, supportive atmosphere for people with all types of challenges, not just Down syndrome, but other disabilities and maybe sometimes even some emotional issues. And with a tremendous sacrifice, but with tremendous love. And so it is a very, very... value is a very thing. But what we do find is that sometimes as parents age, they then have real difficulties in being able to figure out what are they going to do next with regard to their
right.
to their families.
And so, siblings are very helpful with that.
Yeah, they are.
Siblings, other family members.
And that would be the situation that is that where Peter came to
mm-hmm.
New York? Yeah, that's
exactly
where, that's Peter. So you know, I think when family members like yourself and people are involved, they understand a whole lot. What are you, if you wanted to kind of raise awareness, what are the things that people who may not be so familiar with mm-hmm. Down syndrome, what are some of the things they should know, and how can they kind of be part of that broader supportive community?
Right. Well, first of all, is realizing that they don't have special needs. They have needs like you have. like I would have, like everyone has, right? So there aren't special needs per se. Also, there's not a single profile that every single person is the same. They aren't. And it's really about listening to what their needs are as far as how they can express them to be most supportive. And not just thinking because they have a younger disposition that they should be treated like children. Okay. Like I've told people, which fortunately I don't have too often, is Peter's a 52-year-old guy. He has his own ways he likes to do things, whether how his table's set or whatever.
Right.
And that's kind of to be observed and be honored. But a point you were making earlier, which I think is really critical and key, is the way in which you treat people, right? And when you treat someone with wide expectations, with unconditional love for them, they can oftentimes exceed what other limiting forces would entail.
Yeah, and I mean, there's that test or that experiment, which I recall. I don't know all the details, but apparently with teachers, they put two classrooms. They took two sets of kids, and they said to one set of teachers, I'm going to use probably incorrect terms, they said, you have the dumb kids, and you have the smart kids. And lo and behold, at the end of the year, the smart kids had learned a lot more at a higher rate than the dumb kids. However, at the end of the, what they really discovered, that they were exactly equal. They put them in, there was no IQ differential between the two classes. It was what the teachers were expecting, what the teachers were told. And as a result of that, one exceeded a lot more than the other. And I seems to me that's one of the things you're saying mm-hmm. about individuals who have Down syndrome.
Well, that's one of the things about nurture, right, as opposed to the original nature, the one that has the way in which they're nurtured. And for Peter, for instance, when he's told he's smart, he lightens up because he knows what that means.
Right.
Yeah. You know, whereas he may not have been told that when he was a young kid.
Yeah.
Right, because they had limited expectation.
Yeah.
So we offer that to our clients, our community as well.
So as, you know, with the advances in medicine, technology, research these days, I mean, everybody keeps talking about how, well, can we prevent something from happening? Is there research going on that would deal with trying to look at how you might be able to deal with some of the genetic issues?
Well, there are organizations which help people with Down syndrome become the best they can be.
Right.
Through brain research. And also Down syndrome characteristically may lead to when you're older right. and you have lapse of memory, et cetera. So there's that to be aware
right.
of.
Right.
And how you work with that. And there's also the choice of if people don't want to carry their baby to term because they realize they
right.
have Down syndrome.
Right.
And that fortunately is not the moda.
Right.
People are keeping their children with right. Down syndrome and realizing right. how blessed they are to have them in their lives.
Right, right. And I think what you said at the very, very beginning was something that I think probably is in the general public, that that whether it's true or not, but there's probably an image that individuals with Down syndrome do have a rather pleasant disposition, a pleasant personality. It doesn't tend to be a lot of overt aggression there.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed.
And why is that? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Scientifically, why that would take place.
Yeah.
I know it is a characteristic that many people share.
Right.
Although it's articulated differently by right. the person, the family, et cetera.
Yeah, it is. It's a very, very interesting, you know, and on mm-hmm. the other hand, you know, sometimes people, you know, discover that sometimes as people's Alzheimer's disease progresses, there can tend to be a little bit of aggressiveness or negativity in some of that. Not with everybody, but it's just one of those things. And as you say, I think is one of the realities that we deal with is sometimes we just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We just got to figure it out. Now, you talked about Gigi's Playhouse being part of a national group.
Mm-hmm.
So in how many cities are there?
There are about 40 playhouses.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all connected to Inc., which is the home office.
So if somebody in another city or somebody wanted to say, hey, you know, I'd like to learn more about that and, you know, gee, I know somebody or maybe in my family, I didn't know that there was this type of help or support. How can they learn about it?
Right. I recommend they go to gigisplayhouse.org.
Right.
And they find out where the different offices, where the different locations are, right? Which cities, which towns, et cetera.
Now, 40 is quite a few,
mm-hmm.
quite a few. Now, if somebody wanted to say, you know, there is, I looked all this, there's nothing going on in my town, my city. How can they kind of begin to try to put
right,
something
there
together?
There are ways in which they can start a playhouse in their local area, depending on what their need is, and they can contact the home office to figure out how to do that, which can be done.
Right. And again, I do think, I mean, we were talking before about some of the problems that there have been with, you know, elected officials and things like that, and how people, you know, maybe negative on that. But one of the things that is so part of the American tradition is that people form groups mm-hmm. to try to deal with the situation. And this strikes me from what you've described as precisely example of really, really good, generous, sacrificial attempts by family members to do the best for their families and joining together with others. And so if you're in a town in which there isn't anything, there's probably somebody else you know who mm-hmm. is dealing with a family member with Downs, and maybe together you begin to figure out how you put together a playhouse to mm-hmm. be supportive.
Well, that's why New York City was formed by two mothers
right.
who want a community for their children.
Yeah, and that
and
is
that
great.
Was created, yeah.
So listen, Frank Sawyer, thank you for taking the time to be with us, and thanks for the work that you do as the board president of GG's Playhouse, and I'm glad that Peter came to New York because it got you involved in reaching out to a bunch of other individuals. Thanks so
Great.
Much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Cheers.
You. Fanny, I think it's time for us to... I think we need to do another music segment.
Okay.
Okay. Well, who do you think we should plan on doing, you think?
I think, well, you know, Gaga's in the news a lot these days.
Should we do a whole Lady Gaga section?
Yeah, we can. I mean, she has a lot of material, so yeah, I think I can find something.
So suppose we did an intergenerational stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So suppose we did a Lady Gaga and a Madonna session.
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, I think we do both of them.
Yeah.
And
kind of compare contrast.
Yeah, do we need a boy or can we just do them?
No, let's do like women empowerment or something. I don't know.
Okay. So we can do them also?
Yeah.
Them
sure.
also. Okay, we'll call
them also. Yeah.
I think we could do that.
I think
there's certainly enough Madonna stuff out there.
Oh, definitely.
And there's certainly Lady Gaga stuff.
Yeah.
So I think let's do them. Let's
yeah.
do that. And you know what else I think we need to do too? I don't want to do it the same one, but I think we need to do some movie stuff.
Oh, definitely.
I think we need to do a movie stuff.
Yeah.
I
mean, I love movies, so I'll stay home and watch a movie. Watch
okay.
a bunch of movies and
okay.
come and talk about it.
Yeah, I think we should do. I think we should do some movies as part of that. So, you know, again, we talked a little bit about elected officials. One of the things I think our listeners throughout the country should really commit to getting out and vote. Okay. Doesn't matter who you vote for. We're not saying vote, but we are saying that part of our Catholic tradition is that you should participate. And when you look at the fact, the number of elections that were decided by so few votes, and I mean, it's told that the past presidential election, whoever you voted for, but that apparently it was under 100,000 votes in four states that really turned the Electoral College to so that President Trump got elected. And so, you know, and Barack Obama talks about the fact in his first election how few people elected him in Illinois. So election day is coming up. Get out and vote. Express your opinion. Learn about the issues. Be an informed voter. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. Love God, your neighbor, yourself. Our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again next week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.